Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Right on Sunday, August 25th, the Chicago Jazz Orchestra will perform Sinatra by Request, a tribute to the recording legacy of Frank Sinatra, at 3 p.m. at the Studebaker Theater on Michigan Avenue. The show will feature live performances of note-for-note transcriptions of Sinatra's recordings created by CJO Artistic Director Jeff Lindberg, who's also the professor of music at College of Worcester in Ohio, and featuring vocalist Paul Marinaro, who joins us here on WGN Radio. Jeff, Paul, welcome in.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So I hosted a Sinatra show on the station until recently, nearly 5 years. And Sinatra is one name in music that everyone at every age loves to listen to, right, Paul?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it keeps going. It does. So the Chicago Jazz Orchestra is Chicago's oldest continually operating professional jazz orchestra, founded in 1978. And that was you, Jeff, who put that all together with the late Steve Jensen.
Champaign-Urbana, and decided we wanted to keep
University of Illinois.
Right.
Yeah.
We both played in the University of Illinois Jazz Band down there, and we decided we wanted to keep it going, and there were a bunch of us that moved up here at the same time, so we started our own band.
Amazing.
At that time, it was called the Jazz Members Big Band, but since then, of course, we've changed it to the Chicago Jazz Orchestra.
So this is right out of college.
Right.
That you were doing this, yeah. Right. Okay.
Fall of 1978, so it's, what, 45, 46 years ago.
So what was the jazz scene like at University of Illinois when you were studying there?
Oh, it was great. I mean, there were so many great, it still is great, but there were so many great players there, and there were also a number of great places to play. Finding places to play in college towns for jazz is more difficult these days.
Sure.
So there was a lot of hands-on, you know, learning by doing in that area at that time, and great players like Ron DeWar and Howie Smith and Edward Peterson, just on and on. They were, you know, fabulous musicians.
So you then put together, as you said, a band, but when you rehearsed up here, it was at a club on Halsted in Chicago, and that was really the beginning of all of it. And Chicago was the destination. You had to come up here.
Right.
Jazz and blues capital, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that musical journey in the early days, like the late 70s and 80s in Chicago.
Well, when we first started playing, of course, it wasn't easy. We had our first rehearsal in September at a place on Halsted. I can't even remember the name, but we never performed there. We just rehearsed.
Oh, okay.
We had one rehearsal, and then it kind of fell through. Then we had a regular gig starting in October, late October of 1978, at a place called Gas Bars on Belmont and Southport Avenue on the north side, which
Shuba's?
Is now Shuba's.
Okay, all right.
And that club has a great back room in it, a little stage we were barely able to fit on. And that first year was rough because that was the year, the horrible winter.
Oh, 79.
With the snow that...
Oh, yes. Yeah. Kicked out of mayor?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so we had a bunch of gigs canceled, and it was really hard to get people enthusiastic about playing for $5.
You know, cover charge back then.
That was it.
Yeah, yeah.
But we got our first big break the following year. People at the Jazz Institute, including Penny Tyler, Arthur Hoyle, heard us play. We played a lot of Basie, Count Basie music, and Duke Ellington, and they loved us. And so they put us on the first jazz festival, which was in August of 1979.
Wow.
And we were the opening band on the first annual Chicago Jazz Festival.
Okay. What was some of the other music you were playing? You mentioned Count Basie.
Oh, Thad Jones, Mel Lewis, Oliver Nelson. We didn't do a lot of vocal charts in those days. It was mostly instrumental. But we gradually started adding singers, and now we do a lot of material with singers.
But, I mean, you were in your 20s. I mean, this is just right out of college. So where did your love for jazz begin? Like, how old were you when you started listening to records, or what was the influence?
Well, mostly my father's side. He was a clarinetist by ear, and his sister, my aunt, was a fabulous pianist, and I used to listen to her play all popular tunes. She used to play in movie theaters back in the 20s.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and she could play anything by ear. If she heard a tune, she'd sit down and play it on piano. And so it came through that experience. And my father, who actually worked at Southworks in Chicago, okay. he was transferred from Youngstown, where I was born, and he was transferred to Southworks, United States Steel, Southworks in Chicago. And so I grew up in the Chicago area. I went to Homewood Flossmoor High School, and which had a great music program, and I'm sure still does. And then ended up going to U of I.
Okay.
For my bachelor's and master's.
But a lot of the music comes into play probably on vinyl, right, in the 1970s, listening to great jazz.
Oh, yeah. I still have tons of vinyl.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it's funny. I teach a jazz class at the College of Worcester,
yeah.
and there was a period of time when I would bring my vinyl in, and this is back when everybody had CDs.
Mm-hmm.
I'd bring my vinyl in, you know, I'd put it on, and the students would kind of snicker, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
giggle.
Look at the old guy with the vinyl.
But now
records.
I bring my vinyl in, and they go, cool.
It's cool.
Yeah, wow.
Vinyl
this
is
guy
cool.
knows it.
Oh, I've got kids in my 20s and my late teens, and they all have record players. One son has a Zenith, like a console from the 1960s, and then my daughter bought hers at Urban Outfitters, but they listen to everything on there. I mean, pop, jazz, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing, for
Definitely.
Sure. Tell me about the makeup of the orchestra today.
It's generally 17 musicians, 5 saxes, 4 trombones, 4 trumpets, piano, bass, drums, and guitar. But for special performances like the one we're talking about on August 25th at the Studebaker Theater, we're going to expand it to include a string section, French horns, extra woodwinds.
You have to. Live at the Sands, Count Basie,
right.
Quincy Jones, big.
Right. Well, yeah. Sinatra had the best arrangers in the business.
Yeah.
And that was part of his genius, is that he knew how to choose arrangers for his material. In fact, he would sometimes hire two or more arrangers to do the same tune, so he could pick the best one.
Lovely.
Of course, he had the money to do that.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did.
But, I mean, yeah, I mean, that was, the arrangements are part, that, I mean, that's sort of part of the theme of this concert, is that Sinatra probably had more signature songs than anybody in history.
Right. I mean, you sing them all the time, Paul, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of singers are lucky to have one signature song.
Yeah, right.
Etta James had...
Yeah, At Last.
At Last.
Yeah,
that was her signature song, which was great.
Yeah, yeah.
But how many, I mean, Sinatra's numbers, like, countless. It's almost impossible.
That's why when you talk about the 20th century, I mean, he was the guy.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. You and the orchestra have also played at the Kennedy Center Honors, I think, in D.C. for over 25 years.
Right, we played 26 years.
Wow.
We got that gig from Joe Williams.
Okay.
Chicago's Joe Williams.
Yeah.
Who had sung that gig with Count Basie for many years, and then they decided to go in a different direction, and they asked Joe, hey, can you recommend a big band? And he said, well, try the jazz members from Chicago, and they hired us, and it went well, and so we kept it for 26
I would
years.
Say it went very well.
Yeah.
So you are the Paul Schaefer of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that's been doing that for years. You've been
well, I don't right? know about that.
No, for sure. And you played with some music legends. I mean, you talk about Stevie Wonder, Herbie Hancock, Nancy Wilson, Diane Schur, Jack Jones. I mean, pretty incredible.
Yeah, that was a great experience. And those days are kind of over because they've been ruined by social media.
Yeah.
When we played, that was before cell phones.
Yeah. Recording stuff.
And
sure,
so stars would come down and they'd get drunk and they'd sit in with the band and they'd dance.
Yeah.
With Carol Burnett danced in front of the band. They don't do that today because people have cell phones. They don't want.
It's true.
They don't want to go
That's
all
why
over.
Comedians don't go out there and go try to test new material because it's not new material by the end of the night.
Right. So I think the fun in those types of performances is gone.
Paul Marinaro, let's talk about your background a little bit.
Sure.
It was discovered, I heard, listening to some 78 records that were near and dear to you and your family.
Yeah, exactly. So I am the last of a large Italian family, and in a very musical family. Stems from my father. He had always wanted to be a singer. He had a beautiful voice. And he was kind of split between wanting to be like Mario Lanza
mm-hmm.
or Frank Sinatra.
Oh, okay. There's a big difference, yeah. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, out of all of my siblings, I was the one that, the last, was kind of locked in to what he liked.
Okay.
But I think that came from the fact that I found old acetates, old 78 yeah. homemade recordings that my father had made in the 40s.
Wow.
He saved his nickels and dimes, and he bought a machine. I think it was like $300-something in 1946.
Back then, yeah.
It was big money for a 15-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And he would record himself, you know, and I found these acetates at, I was about 5-6 years old. And the fact that my father's voice was in those grooves somehow blew my mind.
Yeah.
I didn't understand how that was there. Like, I didn't know that could be done because, you know, even though we grew up in the vinyl age, nobody had a record cutter.
No, which is, in the 40s and 50s, it was a little more common to do those things. But to think about that you could do your own, you know, recording in your own home was pretty incredible.
Yeah, so yeah. I would hear him, this is Joseph Marinaro, and I'm going to sing a brand new song, That Old Black Magic. So to hear that, not from Sinatra, not from Ella Fitzgerald, but when it's your father.
Stunning.
I think it made a connection with me, and an important one, because I've never, from that moment on, I never understood the concept of dating music. I just heard music.
Right.
It wasn't old music
sure.
to me. It wasn't music that was passé. It wasn't out of style. It was just music. I think the same way you would approach looking at art.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't necessarily put it on a shelf past its prime because it's a certain date. And that's still how I view music. Unfortunately, not many other people do anymore.
Well, I was going to say, when you listen to Sinatra's earliest recordings, it sounds older. It does, just by the way it was recorded at that time. But I would say all of Frank's music is timeless. He did a 70s thing for a while where he was doing covers of Downtown and a few other things.
They all did that. Yeah, Ella was doing Cream, I think.
It's a little bit, it's still fun to listen to for sure. But yeah, music is absolutely timeless. So when did you start, you know, singing yourself?
You know, as a kid, my parents started me on piano.
Okay.
Because
ditto.
Yeah. Everybody sang in my family, mm-hmm. so there was nothing really typically particularly unique about that. And I was known as the only one that could play piano. What they didn't know is I would sing when no one else was around. So I would sing to the radio. I didn't get Sinatra immediately. I knew my father loved Sinatra, and I was, it just wasn't ready for it. I didn't quite mm-hmm. get it. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand what made him so special as a kid. And my father would just shake his head and say, well, you'll find out.
Yeah.
You'll find out.
Yeah.
So I would, my father had gotten rid of a lot of his albums, and he didn't really listen to music as much. I think he was a little bitter that he never was able to pursue it. So when I was a teenager, I would start buying him, you know, Father's Day gifts or birthday gifts, and I would buy him at that point cassette tapes of Sinatra.
Sure.
And he would listen to them, and when no one was around, I would take those tapes and sing along to all of them in my room when no one else was around, and I thought, I think I'm getting it.
Yeah.
I think I get this. And from there, it was the door open. You know, from Sinatra, I was interested in... you know, I would read about Sinatra's influences and who he loved. And, of course, that would bring you to Louis Armstrong and Billie Holiday. And I approached...
And even Bing a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it made you... It made me... it opened that door for me, which eventually leads into, you know, more strict jazz singers as well. So it was kind of the beginning for me was Sinatra, you know.
When did you first... belted out on stage? Like, what was that first time, and how did you come to that?
1997.
Okay.
In Buffalo, New York. I was in college. I was classically trained, and I knew this is what I wanted to do.
We're talking to Jeff Lindberg from the Chicago Jazz Orchestra and renowned vocalist Chicago's Paul Marinaro, and there's more with him next on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Plyer, 720 WGN. We're talking to Jeff Lindberg from the Chicago Jazz Orchestra and renowned vocalist Chicago's Paul Marinaro. Sinatra by Request, happening Sunday, August 25th at the Studebaker Theater. And for tickets, visit cjomusic.org. It's over 25 years doing this, and then... I know a little over 5 years ago, you recreated the live album Sinatra at the Sands. And again, we were talking about Count Basie and Quincy Jones. So, you know, tell us about recreating that historic album live on stage.
That was with Jeff and the Chicago Jazz Orchestra, and it was Jeff's idea, and it's wonderful, you know, as a vocalist to get to sing with those arrangements with a band of that caliber. But it's also a little daunting. Initially, when I started out as a singer, it was important for me to find my own voice. And I knew that if I was going to have any sort of success or longevity, even in a dwindling market, I needed to sound like Paul Marinaro. And I didn't want to be a Sinatra imitator. You know, I think once a male vocalist particularly goes down that path, that's kind of where they get stuck.
Yeah. And then they get piled into a lump of those type of artist.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, and the difficult part with you know, you can say, well, I'll sing these arrangements and bring my own thing to it. That's what my goal is. Yet, when you realize how these arrangements were written and how Sinatra sang them, he's right.
Mm, yeah.
Where he phrased, where he places, you know, where he places his phrasing within the beat and within what's going on around him, it's hard to change that because you're just not as good.
It's true.
So it's a real fascinating process. If you ever go back and listen to some of the outtakes,
which I love, by the way.
Yeah, they're wonderful. But you hear the growth. You hear Sinatra take by take, and it's like he's cutting and pasting and moving things around until that final released version, and that's the one.
Yeah,
he was brilliant at that.
Yeah,
it's a very common misconception that people think that he was one take Sinatra.
No,
that was only for film.
Yeah,
as an actor, he was one take Sinatra. In the studio, he, you know, I think Under My Skin,
27.
Yeah, takes. Take 27 wow, takes. Some are 30, some are 40.
Yeah.
It was...
He wanted it to be right.
Yeah, exactly.
Wanted it to be right. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about Sinatra by Request, happening Sunday, August 25th at the Studebaker Theater. For tickets, you can visit cjomusic.org. We're talking to Jeff Lindberg from the Chicago Jazz Orchestra and renowned vocalist Chicago's Paul Marinaro. And there's more with him next on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Plyer, 720 WGN. We're talking to Jeff Lindberg from the Chicago Jazz Orchestra and renowned vocalist Chicago's Paul Marinaro. Sinatra by Request. Quest happening Sunday, August 25th at the Studebaker Theater. And for tickets, visit cjomusic.org. Now, the audience can bid online for their favorite recordings, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
I thought that a way of celebrating Sinatra's recording legacy would be to allow audiences to vote for the different recordings that they loved that Sinatra made, and then have the winners performed. And that's sort of part of my gig, is that I listen to recordings and transcribe them. That's where a lot of the repertoire for the Chicago Jazz Orchestra comes from.
It's amazing. Yeah.
And so we don't have to go out and buy arrangements, or we don't have to put up with stock arrangements, which normally are not accurate anyway.
Yeah. Right.
So
okay.
Right. We try to do them as they were recorded, and this gives a little level of audience involvement.
Absolutely.
And we have started the voting already, and I'm looking forward to the outcome.
Yeah. CJOmusic.org. What are some of the songs right now that you're seeing, Jeff, that are really hitting the top of the...
Right now, Ring a Ding Ding is first. And actually, we have sort of a hip outcome so far, because there's a few more obscure tunes.
Oh, I like that, though.
Which I love.
Yeah, right. I was
really hoping that that's what would happen.
Yeah.
It's Sunday is second.
Love It's Sunday. Played that
the
a lot.
The Night We Called It a Day is third. Don't Worry About Me, which we do a lot of the time with Paul, is fourth. Rags to Riches, Angel Eyes, Follow Me, I'll Be Around, that's from the Wee Small Hours of the Morning album. And In the Blue of the Evening.
I like this. I like what I'm hearing.
Indian Summer from the Ellington Sinatra album.
Okay.
Violets for Your Furs.
Oh, wow.
Nice. That's about 9th or 10th. The Way You Look Tonight is always a favorite.
Yeah.
So Yeah, it's a nice little mix, and I'm sure it's going to change too.
It's really fascinating because
especially as we talk about it here.
When Jeff brought this idea to me, I thought it was a great idea, but I thought we're going to get Fly Me to the Moon.
My way.
York,
you don't want to talk about your
strangers
you don't
in the
want
night.
To sing
strangers in the night. I'm supposed to say that.
It's but on that list, the only real top
you
10 is The Way You Look Tonight. Yeah. And they're all, you know, the Sinatra favorites, they're wonderful. They're great songs. But I think there's two reasons why they are continually in everyone's top five. First, they're great songs.
Yeah.
They were big hits when they came out. But then it has a lot to do with the fact that when record labels do greatest hits packages, they go for what they know.
It's very true.
So for the last 40, 50 years, every compilation album has been the same exact songs over and over. So people tend not to go back to the original albums and realize the whole album was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, all of Nelson's arrangements. There's so many brilliant. So this is a wonderful opportunity to get some of those that we typically never do.
Is there a song that you heard just now, Jeff mentioned, that you didn't hear that you liked to sing? That is really a unique Sinatra song.
Oh, wow. I'll Be Around. That's a beautiful song, and I've never done it. The Night We Called It a Day, I've never done. That's a great, great song. He did it. Do they specify which album? Because he's done some of these so many different times.
Different arrangements.
Some of them do, some of them don't.
So we get to pick. We get to pick the best.
I get to pick.
You get to pick which one you want to transcribe.
Which one is easiest to transcribe.
Okay, all right, that's fair. It's Sunday. I think that I opened the Sinatra Hour's first show with that. That might be because it's on a Sunday afternoon, right? Like August 25th, so it might be a good opener.
That's an interesting one. And most people don't know it. It's a very late Sinatra entry toward the end.
Yeah.
I suspect that someone who's heard me do I do that song live.
Okay.
So I recorded it as well. But so I suspect that that's maybe where they know it from, but maybe not.
I don't think I've ever heard it like with a full orchestra because I think it was just a guitar, pretty much, right? I mean, the original recording.
I think it's Al Di Meola.
Yeah. One of those guys. Absolutely. Well, this is going to be an amazing, amazing event. And again, it is called Sinatra by Request, and it's happening Sunday, August 25th at the Studebaker Theater. For tickets, visit cjomusic.org. And if you want to actually help pick some of the songs that Paul's going to say, any hints you want to give people to add to the list?
Ooh. Let's or Face Jeff. The Music and Dance, Billy May. That's a great arrangement.
Okay. All right. How about you, Jeff?
Oh, I'll go with anything.
Okay, all right, okay, sounds good. All right, but again, you can help choose some of those songs, too, and making a donation. You can do it at cjomusic.org. Jeff and Paul, this sounds like it's going to be an amazing event. I look forward to seeing you guys on stage.
Yeah, wonderful, and a great venue.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful venue. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, you're listening to 720 WGM.